Welcome to the Ultra Running and Business Podcast, a random mix of running, people, performance, and business content. I'm Jakob, your host, and this is the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. In this edition, we're turning the tables, and I'm handing over the microphone and the job of the interviewer to Warren Pohl, the CEO and founder of natural sports nutrition company 33 Fuel. Warren is going to talk to me about my reasons for running, how I balance ultra running and professional life, how I use running for jet lag management and what I call the stopover ultra, how I use running hacks for energy boost or to slow my system right down. We're going to talk about how to get you started and the essentials you need. I hope you enjoy what we put together. Warren, over to you.
My name is Warren. I'm one of the co-founders here at 33 Fuel. And today on the show, it is my great pleasure to be hosting Mr. Jakob Blok. Now, Jakob is the CEO of a commodities headhunting and knowledge firm, which you will not be surprised to know is not the number one reason that we have him on this podcast. Because as well as this, Jakob is also someone who has a very serious ultramarathon running habit. Aha, there you go. You can see something starting to come together here. What it is that Jakob is able to really shine a light on so nicely in this conversation is how to successfully balance the challenges and also the, you know, the potential benefits to really reap the benefits of a serious athletic pursuit that takes up a lot of time, alongside a serious and demanding job that also takes up a lot of time, while also still being able to be the best version of yourself you can be for your family and your home and social life. And when you put all this together, it sounds a little bit utopian. It sounds like if we're not careful in this conversation, we could be in that area of kind of, you listen to it and you feel a bit like, well, if I'm not actually smashing out multiple ultra marathons, having endless meetings at the highest level of my career, and then also being an incredible parent, father, boyfriend, wife, husband, friend, whatever it may be, then somehow I've failed in life. And frankly, unless you're sleeping less than 2 hours a night, you're probably underdoing it. No, this is really quite the opposite, because the point of all these things that Jakob really puts together so nicely is that unless you are able to execute them and have them all be beneficial to each other, as in your career feeds your sport feeds your home life, you know, it nourishes your health, your well-being, your mental health. That allows you to be a better person, a calmer colleague, a more thoughtful leader. Unless you can really put all of those things together and be healthy yourself in a holistic sense, then you've got the balance wrong. So this conversation is all about how to find that balance. And there's some beautiful ideas in there that Jakob introduces. For example, if you've ever wondered what a stopover ultra is in the middle of a long haul flight, well, you're about to find out. How about introducing the idea of processing time, you know, giving the brain free space during exercise to really let it germinate on those business problems that are a bit thorny or even things in your personal life you're looking to work on. And if that wasn't enough, Jakob also has the what may just be the most perfect formula for creativity. That'll be coming up all in this podcast. And with a great intro to Jakob, I'm very excited to bring over this conversation with Mr. Jakob Blok. Thank you very much for taking the time this afternoon to join me for a chat.
Thank you, Warren. Pleasure to be here.
Now, so here you are, unusually, by the looks of things, actually in the UK here, and also unusually, not running. I know you combine both sides of what seems like this comfortably split personality between a very serious and extreme full-time CEO day job, and on top of that, a rather extreme running habit as well. So I thought we'd kick off with the running to get things going. How did you find yourself so immersed in the world of ultra running? How did that journey come about for you?
I started about 3-4 years ago. So I haven't actually been running for that long. Wasn't a runner much before then. Had as part of the rehab from an ankle operation, running gave me an opportunity to set some aims, and it was encouraged to get some movement around the ankle. And as part of setting those aims, the idea of pitting myself and a colleague against the Marathon des Sables in 2016 seemed a good idea at the time.
Brilliant.
That's how it came about. But
I like that. So you're injured, you have an ankle injury. There aren't that many people who would think the next logical step is to take up running, let alone that having started to run, the next logical step would be to take on 150 plus miles across the Sahara carrying all your own kit. So I love the scale of the ambition, which I think we'll probably find plays into your work element as well. Just talk me through the injury a little bit. I mean, was it the specialists and doctors recommending that you actually start running on the ankle to help it? Or was this something that you thought may be helpful given that movement had been recommended?
I think we could probably positively say it was the latter. I was actually thinking as you asked the question whether was this actually an outright recommendation from the consultant, and I think it would be disingenuous to suggest that it was. I think that was entirely self-imposed. Obviously, a movement of actually, I think the sort of operation that I had, which is not a particularly complex one. But if you have cartilage damage as a result of a football injury, there is a way to fix you. But they always say it's not a permanent fix. It's just pushing the problem 10 years down the line. So I'm in that 10 year window at the moment. So I better make the most of it. No, I think the running was not something that was necessarily encouraged by the doctor, but I think the nature of trail running with the movement that it creates around your ankle bone and the varied terrain, I think has merits. I think pounding tarmac in the monotonous and hard fashion that inevitably involves could never be recommended for any sort of recovery.
Now, that does make a lot of sense, Jakob. To pavement pounding works for some people. I've never found it works very well for me, but trail running does seem to work a lot more muscles as the body has to stabilize itself, takes a bit of the impact out. But I'd still like to see the look on your consultant's face when he finds out that you interpreted move your ankle a bit as, well, I'd better start running ultramarathons, ideally carrying weight as well. Which brings us to the Marathon des Sables. Was this your first major ultra or even your first ultra? Had you run a marathon before you went out there? How did the progression go? Because it must have been very steep.
It was the first ultra. And at the time we signed up, it felt somewhat fraudulent because we were 5-10K runners. But we got up to speed. We got a bib number a year earlier than we had anticipated, and so shortened the training period by about a year. So we had 6 months, and it was myself and a colleague. So yeah, we spent a lot of time together over that period, and I think it consumed the entire office for a period of time, with all the shenanigans associated with an MDS, the logistics, the packing, the training, and of course the interest from friends and family and business contacts. And you know, we teamed up with a local charity, and we did a lot of work for them, and did just the usual. It takes over your life. And I think the fun that I had, as far as my consulting, going back to your previous comment, was that in the end I had a chance of sending him a picture of my foot with the bank or with ankle with a medal hanging off it, and just with the word thank you. And it works. So it was a steep learning curve indeed, but we managed to create a lot of momentum, and we had full support of our families and our colleagues, and you know, more than just support. They were encouraging us, they were pushing us, it all helped. Doing the MDS is never a solo effort.
No, absolutely not. It's it takes a lot of people and a lot of work to get yourself over that finish line. But it seems that for you, as for many others, the finish line was not really the finish, because you've just carried on running ever since. I mean, did you look at the MDS as a one-off, thinking, well, you know, I'm going to make a lot of significant life changes to achieve this goal, but they're temporary, Or was this part of a process? Well, you know, I'll run this and then I'll see what's next. And, you know, this is a springboard into further running. How was it for you? Because I say, it looks like you've certainly kept piling on the ultra marathons ever since.
Yeah. I think at the time of building up to the first MDS, I guess the honest answer is that I didn't know. The colleague that I ran with, he hung up his boots after the race and didn't really run since. And I, courtesy of LinkedIn, some business contact of mine said, do you want my bib for the London Marathon? You know, a week after coming back from the MDS. And I said, yes, I was hooked. I think it for me, it yeah, not just the MDS, but the build up to it, but certainly the whole experience of the MDS and how it made me feel. I knew at that point, this is not a one-off. And so for me, sitting on that bus after the race, having not listened to a single track off the iPod during the entire race, but simply just taking in the extraordinary experience that it is running 156 miles across Sahara with a bunch of other lunatics that you didn't know when you signed up or that you didn't know when you arrived, but you left with a lot of friendships richer, as well as what it gave me personally, just in terms of the time that I had with me, was something that I felt was so profound and was never going to be a one-off. So yeah, I think that particular lid of that box was well and truly off. I guess I knew it at that time. So it led on to about 23 races in the last 3 years. So it's been borderline addiction, I guess you could say. It just happens to be one of those addictions that are not necessarily frowned upon. So yeah, for me, it was a true eye opener.
You mentioned, and with 23 races since, this is clear. I mean, this is something that we really want to get into. At the heart of this show is balancing what is an extreme level of running with an extreme professional work, personal life. So just give us a quick overview, if you could, of your professional life, your business, what you do, and sort of what that demands of you on the other side of the coin.
Yeah. I'm the CEO of a business that is involved in headhunting, talent advisory, research from an HR point of view. We have activities and offices here in Asia and in the US, and we undertake projects all over the world, a lot in Middle East, a lot in continental Europe, a lot in Asia, and a lot in North America. We and me personally work closely with leaders on building successful teams through actively identifying the talent that's required. So we only work in areas where talent is scarce, and you need to be a bit more proactive about going out, engaging with the sort of folk that you wish to bring into your team. That's where firms like mine and people like me come into the picture. It's kind of the ultimate people business, but it also has no closing time. So you're always available. You're always in contact, and you, or at least my role, involves an enormous amount of travel. And we have teams that are based around the world. Last year, I covered 83,000 air miles on 54 separate flights. And on top of that, I tried to get, 10 or 12 ultras in, where I try to be as competitive as I can be. So yeah, it's intense. And it calls for a strategy and a balancing act that's difficult to, it's difficult to perfect, and it and every time you think you've nailed it, something else changes that tweaks that picture, and you feel a failure again. So some of the things I think we're going to be talking about is also, mental hacks and so on and so forth, and it's always work in progress.
But it sounds like you clearly in your professional capacity, there's a lot of, you got to plan stuff, you got to organize stuff, you got to execute. Marathon des Sables, very similar. It's not an easy race to all intents and purposes. If you've done the training, the running's probably the easiest bit. It's all the unusual stuff, i.e. you're carrying equipment, you're in a climate you don't know, there is sand, there may be scorpions, you're pretty much sleeping rough every night, you need to cook food. all of the surrounding pieces are really what makes your marathon de Saab tick. You can be fit, but if you haven't prepped the rest, if you're not going to sort your feet out and cook before you go to sleep, you're not going to make day three. So I'm sure you must have been taking a very seasoned and analytical approach to building your own strategy. And I appreciate that. Okay, it may not be finished yet, but you are spinning these plates at a much higher level than most people would even consider attempting. So that's what I'd really love to go into here. And I mean, I know we talked about some areas of this in terms of how do you achieve a balance between your professional life and your athletic life when they're both so full on. And maybe also, even if you do achieve that balance, what happens to the rest of your life? So, I mean, there's an awful lot we could go into there. But why don't we kick off particularly with the idea of simply making this happen. How do you manage in your routines and approach the training, the racing, the work, and the travel? How do you segment them? How do you blend them? How do you manage the goals between the two? I mean, give us an intro to that, if you could.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I think as I alluded to earlier, I actually think it's relatively impossible to get that perfect balance. And I don't think you ever reach a point where you think, yeah, now I've nailed it. I've got this equalized perfectly. So I think for starters, I think it's important to try and not beating yourself over not having perfected that balance and not compare and contrast yourself with others who seemingly have it nailed, and it makes you feel like you're failing. I think that's a starting point, is that it's about you doing you, and try and do that with the sort of least fallibility as you can, but accept that that it's a picture that will be forever changing, and you have to try and navigate along with those changes. So for me, it's also accepting that the different aspects that will take different priorities at different times. And for me, I mean, my cocktail is about being a good dad to three wonderful kids. It's about building an empire, which is what you see here, and try and be a meaningful leader to my colleagues. It's about trying to be something to my father, who went from being a GP to falling over and hitting his head and becoming, you know, brain damaged as a result of it, and a different father as a result. And it's about training for and competing in ultras, and ultimately it's about seeking adventures. So the five fairly large components, and they will and the order in which I read them out, not necessarily the order in which they take the priority at all times. So in terms of hacks and input on how to get that balance, and I think from a personal point of view, for me, I go to bed early and I get up early, and I get a lot of my running and my training out of the way at times where lots of other people sleep.
So I was just saying, what does an early bedtime mean for you, and what does an early rise mean? Just to put it in context.
So bedtime, I would say 10 o'clock, and early rise would be, say, 4:45, 5 or 5:15, something like that.
That's a good schedule.
Yeah, and I think if I run a lot in the morning, I find that I have a lagging window at about 3 o'clock, and I would often go to my gym, catch some yoga mats and a pillow and an eye mask, and take 20 minutes cat nap. And that, so understanding how your own rhythm can be optimized, I think is a really good shout. It's not about kind of impressing people with, oh, I get up early and I do X, Y, and Z. I think it's just find your own balance. And I think the long distance running is a time thief, and you need to figure out where you're going to secure that time from without it having a big knock-on effect and taking time away from other aspects that you may prefer to spend time on. So for me, that morning piece is important. always bringing the trainers on business travel is important. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about jet lag as well. So I think that dovetails nicely with that. But it just means that you're able to get running time in, you know, wherever you are. Luckily, it's one of the few sports that can be really light on equipment. I say can be because I think ultra running has proven that there is a, you know, the manufacturers have found a way to create a whole lot of gear that you supposedly cannot now run without. But actually, in its simplicity, is the trainers, and the rest, I think you can improvise. Then I would say get the Audible app. You can eat your way through a hell of a lot of literature while you run. You can eat your way through a hell of a lot of podcasts while you run, which has to be good for business and just generally good for feeding your brain and your intellect. I would say commit to races ahead so you avoid this peak and trough, kind of getting the post-race blues that you inevitably get when you finish the race and then what? And it's been a big focus and now it's done and you're often sort of left in a bit of a lull. I think I try and get some sort of plan for the year ahead. It's made up of certainties, dreamer type of races, lotteries and maybes, but at least there's a plan. It may change many times over, but I think you've got to try and put something together that has a little bit of ambition, understanding that if you get injured, of course, everything changes. I would say try and get the kids engaged. Friends and family can often be put off a bit by the long distances you end up running, which is a bit of a shame because actually I would be just as happy running a 5K at any pace compared to, you know, half a marathon at speed. You know, it doesn't have to be hill runs. It can be anything. I think it's always frustrating from my side that if I ask somebody if they'd like to go for a run, that it's somehow, I don't know, that somehow your running track record can count with you. And so I think I think if you can get some running pals, I think that can be good. I think for me, I use my 12-year-old son will go on his bike and I will run. And that means we can share some stuff together. You know, we've also recently picked up Thai boxing, so it gives us something fitness related we can do together. And I think that helps get the buy-in so you don't end up becoming the solo artist, which I think can happen when things take over a bit on sort of pursuing ultra running. I would say if it's possible, if you can get a gym in your office, awesome. I've got one, but then that's maybe an easier decision for me to make given the fact that I designed the office. But it doesn't have to be fancy. You know, you can, the treadmill that I got was gym grade, as in like it was a proper commercial kit, but it's 500 quid on eBay. And it's a huge advantage. I got a cross trainer as well. It was around about the same price, which is good because it's non-impact and it allows me to pick up kind of running fitness immediately after races. It's good for rehab when you have niggles and so on and so forth. But it also just allows you to, in the absence of time and living in the UK, so sometimes it's also the absence of decent weather, that you can get some sort of structure going. You just get it to play around your life. Then I would say get a decent running watch that has some control and tabs on what your heart's doing. I've got a sort of a heart rate watch that tells me when to push, when to pull back. And I do a little check every morning to see how the watch is interpreting what I'm doing. And I think that's a bit of tech, and who doesn't like that? But it also, it gives another good clue as to what I should be doing. And it could be, you know, a kick up the ass, or it could be, you know, hey, hold fire, you're risking injuring yourself. And I think that's quite useful. And then I would say, finally, get a good physio and make sure that you go to him or her early when you have niggles. I think that's a godsend. But actually, if you want to pursue this sort of running, that physio will be on your Christmas card list pretty soon. You'll see a lot of each other. But it's a lot better to go to a physio than going for surgery or anything else for that matter. So yeah, those would sort of be my hacks on getting the balance.
Well, that's a really good and comprehensive list there, and I like the I particularly like the point about the physio there, and I think that maybe ties into something you mentioned earlier about your ankle injury, where you were basically told, you know, we can't fix this like completely, but we can buy you another 10 years or whatever it may be. And I have a little pet theory that running injuries are a window into the future, as in the thing that stops you running today is the thing that will, if you weren't running, it's the thing that's going to stop you walking in 20 years. Therefore, you've kind of got this advance warning of where the weaknesses are. You can do something about it. You keep regular contact with a good physio and build a relationship. You do prehab as well as rehab. You're strengthening your whole biomechanical system so that, you know, today the goal is, well, I want to run 5 more ultras this year, but maybe in 60, 50, 30, whatever it is years, the goal is I want to be able to get out of a chair on my own. You know, I mean, ultimately, they all play into the same thing. And just with that theme in mind, you mentioned jet lag. Alongside that, I mean, 54 flights in 1 year for you recently. Plus, we all know that primarily a lot of work involves sitting down, whether it's around conference tables or at the laptop or whatever it may be. Sitting down and running are generally not things that go together well, whether you're sat on a plane, whether you're sat in a meeting. You know, you suddenly then want to go and run. Well, maybe the body's not very happy. It's been in the wrong situation for a while. That's why so many people, you know, whether it's lower back, whether it's knees, whether it's hamstrings, whatever it may be. Have you had sort of any core biomechanical issues you've needed to repair? And how do you find, how do you manage to navigate, you know, time sat down, whether on flights or for work, versus time spent running and making sure that you're able to do both while not having to see your physio unnecessarily or running yourself into injury, which just ends the whole game right there?
Yeah, I think almost an expected part of ultra running is that you will have bone stress related injuries. For me, it's been, you know, ankle and shins. So the parts of the body where you have probably, you know, the poorest blood circulation. And yeah, it has led to me leaving at least one ultra race in a wheelchair when you just, you know, when you get the reaction you get from bone stress. Now I've luckily avoided outright stress fractures on my shins, but it's a balancing act, and I think it's part and parcel of the type of running. I have changed my running technique. I've added poles, for instance, and adding compression, adding kinetic tape, to different ways to try and experiment with how you can alleviate the pressure on certain parts of your body when you execute an ultra, but also to try and prevent these issues arising by improving your blood circulation and so on. Now, in terms of the challenges you allude to around having a desk-based job and then exposing yourself to this type of these type of sort of athletic challenges, it's a good point, because some of my friends that are triathletes or whatever, their day job or, you know, could be as a carpenter. Now, so, you know, they will on top of having quite a structured timetable that makes it a lot easier for them to structure their training around, they also have a job where they're standing and they're using their body and they're lifting and so on and so forth. So for me, if I get a long run in the morning, resting for the rest of the day, or let's take yesterday, for instance, I ran in the morning, probably have the rest of the day sitting down, and then I went for an hour's Thai boxing in the evening. So that's a pretty full-on day, although my watch suggests that, you know, the watch, I think, said go for it last night. And I sort of thought that's a little unfair. But I think I think if you can get a long run in early, that's also then I think you can allow yourself and not feel guilty about sitting at your desk. Clearly, if you could have your meeting standing up, great. I'm loving the stand-up desks. But again, you're talking about something that's unless it's there in your office and somebody has invested in that, you're a bit snookered. But you know, having meetings standing up, great. I think when I'm in London or through airports, do you take the stairs? Where even if you much prefer the lift or much prefer the escalator, I think when it comes to sitting on airplanes, I always pay extra to get some leg room. I mean, I'm 6 foot two, but you know, I don't need to go business class if I can get a really good deal, and they're a bit few and far between. So you gotta buy the little advantages where you can. I borrowed a Compex muscle stimulator from my physio. I often use that in midair. It's a very good way to stimulate.
Yeah, which one is it? Is that the stuff like the actual sleeves that go over the leg, or is it something else? I forget which one.
No. This is one where you put on these basically two little sticky patches, and then there's wires attached to them that will then you send a current through them, I guess, and you then set whether it's to blood flow or recovery or heavy legs, or it's got a thousand different settings. And I think my physio just taught me a handful of them. But it basically creates a spasm in your of the muscle. I'm sure there's a more eloquent way of putting it, but I think it just creates movement, creates blood flow in your legs, which I guess is paramount to recovery, but also for maintenance. And I often, on the back of a long haul, I often do an ultra. So you'd argue that it's not the best way to set yourself up for running an ultra, having just been on a long haul, and then step off and then immediately get on a race bus to some remote mountain somewhere to get yourself race ready. So the Compex for me has been a good way. And so has those highly attractive compression tights. You just got to be a bit careful that you're in private when you wear them. And, you know, I think it's they're good to, you sleep with them on and, you know, you wake up, they give you again, improved circulation. I don't really do ice baths and that sort of stuff. I just, I don't think I've ever am in locations where there's necessarily enough ice cubes, but I think, yeah, I'd probably, if one could, you'd add ice bath to that.
Well, that sounds like a good kit. I know exactly what you mean about the compression wear. And for anyone who's wondering which bit, I'm guessing that you are thinking about the kind of full-length compression sock, which really is a woman's hold-up tight, pretty much, which, they're fine when they're under your clothes, but you need either an understanding wife or no overlooked windows when you're wearing those without anything else. Yeah. But the Compex, that sounds really interesting. And do you ever have people on aircraft wondering what you're doing, rummaging around with the box of wires in the current anti-terrorist airline climate? I'm just wondering if you maybe get the occasional slightly worried glance from the stewards and stewardesses as you're there sort of wiring up your legs in the middle of the flight.
Yeah, both at that point, and also very much when you go through security. Anything with wires is going to get a bit of extra scrutiny. But it's it actually works it works very well. But yeah, it does raise a few eyebrows.
And so for the to finish up on the flying side, by putting so many flights in, like we said, you know, you had recently 54 flights in the year. You're potentially running a race straight off the back of that, which on the one hand sounds crazy. On the other hand, you're like, well, it's sort of taper to a degree. You may be able to manage those times. But what about the jet lag? I mean, that relates to anyone going long haul anywhere. What are your preferred ways to manage the jet lag? Because, you know, from the look of your social media and the other stuff you put out there, you know, you are potentially landing and running within an hour. Not that you necessarily always do, but you know what's. Yeah, but at the same time, it's not like it's a holiday. You've still got to be in a business meeting at 7 a.m. the next morning. Just tell us a little bit about that, if you could, because I think that's. I think there's a chance that jet lag could be optional in some cases. But how do you go about managing it?
I do one or two things. So one is the kind of the stopover ultra, which is a principle I've added to my travel in the last couple of years. Okay. That's different to normal jet lag management, but let's do take that one first. So I figured out that if you're traveling 13 hours to Singapore anyway. And you're there for the week. So it's a 5-6 day investment of your time anyway. You know, in January last year, I signed up for the Angkor Ultra in Cambodia, the Angkor Wat area. So a World Heritage site run amongst the temples. And we figured out that logistically, we could do this by an extra 30-hour investment. So a little bit of extra cost, 30 hours extra, a little bit of extra carbon footprint, but a profound experience. Whereas, and those 30 hours for me that I was in Cambodia, well, dealt with a couple of things. First of all, when you run that sort of distance, and any ultra will have you up at 3 o'clock at night. Now that's a problem with your normal body clock, but it's not a problem when you're jet lagged because you're probably up at that time anyway. So there's a slim advantage there. But actually the profound impact of experience that goes with that type of event, I think there's something about that extreme endurance and extreme proximity to Mother Nature in an environment that's just, I don't know, your senses are so heightened that whatever input you get during the 30 hours feels like you've been there for 3 months. And I promise you, Warren, the business trips I've had for the last 10 years to Singapore have been positively unmemorable. But this one will I'll never forget that trip. You know, for that 30-hour extra investment. So for me, that was pretty rich on both something that would feed my mind and also something that really knocks the jet lag into it really deals with it in a very comprehensive way. But there's no way you're ever going to run an ultra distance unless you're part of a race when you just arrive. So the stopover hack is one thing, which is one thing that I think is really exciting. But I also totally understand that for some people, they will say, well, listen, Jakob, I've already been away from my family for 5-6 days. I don't want to add another 30 hours or whatever you can slim it down to. I'd rather just get home and spend time with my family. I totally get that. I'm just saying that I've experimented with adding that relatively minor extra, and it's given me a massive return on that cost and time investment. I think the question around jet lag and how I manage that, because I think it is a smart way where running can play a part. For me, it's understanding what impact different distances have on you. I think I'm very in tune with what different distances means for the rest of my day. So I know what distance I need to give me an energy boost. I know what distances I need to slow me down or to make me sleepy. And as long as you don't get those muddled up, so don't go for an energy boost distance and pace when you want to slow yourself down and sleep, and vice versa.
What would be an energy boost distance pace for you, and what would be a sort of slow yourself down type run? What do those two things look like? Because that's a great concept.
Yeah, I think an energy booster, if you're tight for time, is a fast 5K. If you've got a bit more time, it's a fast-ish 10K. Those are, for me, those are distances, and depending on what sort of pace you can manage, those are energy boosters. If I want to be tired, I need to get to the sort of half marathon distance, and again I will do that on an urban run in Singapore. I will find a coastal urban. It's all a bit the same out there. You know, you find a nice coastal run and probably cover anything between 16 and 25K, that will normally have a good kind of jet lag equalizer, and it would allow me to go to sleep and wake up relatively adjusted time-wise.
Nice. I love that idea of actually understanding how the runs affect your body and what sort of a run or exertion level produces different results and what sort of result you're looking for, so you can achieve that. Now, in the broader business world, it's something I've been very interested in, and I'm hoping you can shed some light on it. Clearly, we speak a similar language, as will most of the people listening to this, in terms of understanding the benefits of looking after yourself, fitness, pushing yourself, challenge, all of that stuff. But I don't know how much of that message gets to the broader community, the broader business community. from my perspective, it appears that a healthy CEO should be aligned to a healthy business. You know, the people at the helm of the business should not look like they're about to drop dead tomorrow. And running and physical exercise brings with it a host of, as long as you get the balance right, physical and mental benefits, both in terms of stimulating your thought, giving you that thinking time, also helping your mood, helping you, as you talk about, you know, be more refreshed for that meeting when you've arrived on the other side of the world. But is this a message that resonates with the broader business community, do you find, or do they not really make any sense of it? I mean, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think part of this is from personal experience, and part of it is just a curiosity I've developed on the subject, but even the curiosity has grown out of my personal experience with it. So the correlation between running trails and running a business is something that caught my interest when I returned from my first ultra. I think issues around increased empathy levels when you return from an ultra, it may be born out of having had switch off time, maybe born out of having an opportunity to pit yourself against something that, you know, we're perhaps not naturally conditioned for, in my opinion, has a profound positive impact on your leadership and on how you deal with problems and how you deal with colleagues and what you are like to be around as a colleague, let alone a leader. So I think it has to be part of, I think fitness has to be part of the toolkit for a CEO. Now, I feel privileged to be able to run. I understand that many of my age peer group, they may not be able to, but it doesn't have to be running. I mean, there are many non-impact sports that one could partake in that may not necessarily have the Mother Nature element, which I don't think is unimportant here, because I think it's part of what makes the ultras irresistible. Is a big part of it is that proximity to nature and I guess the relative unpredictability in a lifestyle that otherwise is actually entirely predictable. I don't think that's unimportant, at least not from my point of view. But I think let's talk about some more tangible things in terms of what I feel it gives a leader. There's the processing time where you can see, I find that whatever you choose to think about when you run, and that is a choice, actually often on ultras, when I race, if you like, I'm not entirely sure that I like the word racing, because I think it implies that you are racing against others. I don't actually really see it like that. But I think that the point is you've got time, yeah, and you've got processing time. Whatever you choose to use that period for, sometimes I don't use it for processing. I use it for not thinking about anything. So call it a cleanser. Other times I do use it to process business issues, but that tends to be part of my training. So that's your everyday. That's not when I go in a desert somewhere and I go on a mountain somewhere. That's my everyday training. I use that as time to process business problems and also to think about the business and to think about and having that creative input that I often associate with my running. I'll give you a bit more of an idea on that, because I often need to have a notepad right next to the treadmill in the office, and there's a reason for that. And I don't know if you come across it or ever tried it, Warren, but fat coffee or bullet coffee is normally what I fuel myself up with before I run in the morning. So this is pre-breakfast time. So the combination of that refined brain oil and the organic butter and the double shot of the organic coffee, plus the endorphin rush of running, it's an idea creating machine on steroids, and it becomes a pretty exciting part of the day, where you can often come up with ideas and solutions to problems that you may otherwise be a bit stuck on. So yeah, I mean, I use that positive stress or that positive sense of being wired for the benefit of the business. It's something I've made work for me. Plenty. I have a very strong view that mountain marathons, they will give you energy, and road marathons will take that energy away. And I think unless that you've tried both, it may not make sense. But I promise anybody who is listening to this who have not tried both, I think once you try compare and contrast, you'll understand where I'm coming from. So yeah, mountain races will give it you energy, and the tarmac version will take it away. So going back to your point about CEOs, I think, as you alluded to, I think the fitness is intrinsically linked to brain and mental health. I think that should be pretty paramount to anybody leading a business, leading others, or burning the candle at both ends. Whatever CEO that you have, I think that person needs to be everything they can be for the business they're leading. And for me, the fitness piece is a pretty key part of a healthy mind.
I think that sheds a lot of nice light on that. But I really got your description of, you know, I'm imagining it's early morning, everyone else is asleep, you're knocking back some coffee before you go out, you're taking the run, and it's almost like an equation, you know, and I just scribbled a couple of notes here. You know, coffee plus run plus endorphins equals creativity. And I think that's such a lovely way to put it. I've certainly experienced that. I've never put it down as succinctly as that. That's, I think you've just unlocked a kind of running type of E equals MC squared there, Jakob.
Well, I'm glad. Hopefully try it. It's a potent cocktail. What can I say?
It must be. And having that, I like the way you refer to it as processing time as well. You know, that time where, whether it, in any long physical endeavor, there's a certain beautiful simplicity, like in the case of an ultra, well, one foot in front of the other until you get to the end of it. Therefore, there's a lot else that the mind can do, and it forces you out. You're not connected particularly. You're not on your phone. You're not taking messages. You're not talking to people. Therefore, that 10,000 foot view that so many business leaders or writers would talk about, you're forced into it. And that sounds to be like your experience from it. And that's able to be a benefit, presumably for your business brain as much as for your personal brain, you know, in terms of personal relationships, your kids, your father, all of those things you talked about, you know, being able to be the best person you can be there.
Yeah. No, I think you know, whatever you, you know, this idea of putting yourself, you know, in kind of in harm's way of whatever Mother Nature might decide to throw at you, and coming away from that experience, realizing that it's all doable, and the distances are just, you know, numbers. Let's not forget that you could decide to walk it, you know, as long as you, obviously there's cutoff times and whatnot. And for me, I don't want to walk a race. I'm there for the running, but it's not like an Ironman, you know. There is a clock ticking somewhere, but the aim is the finish line. It's the finish time is a nice to have, but ultimately the finish time is affected by lots of unknown factors, unlike a city marathon where there's a lot of focus on the finish time. Even a non-runner will know to ask a runner, so what was your finish time? You know, whereas if you finish an ultra, it's not a question that you get. And the bits that you come away with, well, at least from personal experience, it's not about the hardship. And all the movies that I put together, and some have actually been picked by the MDS Expo because they're emphasizing the smiles and the human connections and the laughs and the sort of, not the chest thumping kind of, this is hard, aren't we, you know, we're doing something that's ultra human. I completely disagree with that. I would like to see ultra running become more of an aim for more regular runners, because I think it's such a special experience. And I think if I could, you know, I load out a few stories and videos to try and educate and inspire people on LinkedIn, you know, to get perhaps more suits and C-suites out on the trails, because I think it has a profound positive impact. It's not to promote the competitiveness of running, is whatever you want it to be, but I think it's for me, in terms of mental health and in terms of my own equalizer and what it's given me, I would like others to reap the same benefits. So that's why I You know, I like to work with people like you. I like to get the message out there. I like to get a few stories out. I've found that the business community are curious about it and are supportive. Hopefully next year we'll be sort of launching the first Commodity Ultra to get a few C-suites out and join me. So that's the plan.
And to get them out in nature, because something you said related to this that really resonates, and the difference between a city marathon versus an ultra, which normally is going to be found in nature, because partly because that's sort of where it's grown up, but also when you need to go that far and the races are going to be smaller in terms of the entry numbers, you're not going to close down a city center. You know, you're not going to close down a city center for 20 hours while people go and run round and round it. And probably people are going to be less inclined to the natural element of trail running, of the ultra marathon, the way people are, it puts you in that environment. I think it does give a lot. And I don't know for certain what the evidence behind this is. I certainly know the Japanese have what they call forest bathing, as in literally going for a walk in nature as a way of sort of cleansing the system. And truly it does, in, you know, in a city, getting into a park, getting out somewhere where you can breathe air, you really feel like you're recycling it through the body and getting some of that city dirt out of you. But the natural element is such a, or can be such a spur. I love your idea. Another little note I scribbled down here, get more suits and C-suites out on the trails. I mean, good for them, good for business. Yeah. And it sounds like, are you plotting a commodities trading ultra marathon to try and literally spearhead that movement?
Yeah. I figured I'd better put my money where my mouth is. And so, yeah, we got some plans. And I think that will be a little sort of commodity centric. The community, of course, will be coming from the same industry. But actually, it's not meant to be sort of a networking opportunity. I think we all brought a whole lot of work with us on the trail. It would sort of negate the purpose for going in the first place. Because actually, I found that with a lot of the ultras, one of the nice things about particularly the multi-stage, because the multi-stage will tend to have a social element, of course, because you camp at night. And not to say that the non-stops don't, because you've got the before and the after and the during and the checkpoints, and they're quite supportive as well. But a multi-stage have a unique social aspect. And again, you can't complete a multi-stage ultra on your own. You know, you need to also know how to, you know, navigate yourself socially in that setting. One thing I thought was particularly refreshing, unlike most dinner parties where, you know, what you do for a living, you know, is inevitably coming up and you will be judged accordingly. I found when you're standing there with your bag in Sahara, nobody really cares what you do for a living. You're all in the same boat. It's a great leveler. It's very inclusive. And you start judging people for completely different qualities. And actually what they do for a living is completely irrelevant. May come up on day four to understand what you do when you're not out here. But I found at least that it was refreshingly far down the list of questions. And I think it was because of different qualities you were looking for, and you had time, and there was no judging a book by its cover. There was a chance to talk to people and get to learn people, obviously, particularly your bivouac mates. And yeah, I was struggling a bit to understand the lad from Newcastle, but that was because I'd never really heard English spoken like that. But I'm sure he was struggling with many aspects of living with me too, but it was just, the social aspects were brilliant. And what you learn about how you navigate with others there is just, it was a great life experience. So I think that's also what makes these, the takeaways from these ultra races much, much greater than what most people would focus on when they sign up, which is the distance and the running challenge in itself. And hopefully what they will come away with is a sense of achievement of having completed that distance and having achieved the goal they set out to do. But the lovely derivatives they get with them on completing it, I think will take them by surprise. And those derivatives are related to them discovering parts of themselves that they didn't know before, limits or lack of themselves and persistence levels that they would never have had a chance to actually put to the test before. And then also the human elements of overcoming challenges with other people, people that you didn't know before, but now you are working and collaborating with, supporting each other, you know, right down to, you know, sharing foods. And if somebody's lost something, you help each other out. Nobody brought anything just in case. You cannot have that in your bag. And I remember James Cracknell told me at one of the experts before we went, he said, Jakob, a single piece of advice, find some mates with big bags, because there will be food in there that they will not need, and you can start eating it. And I did. And that technique worked well. And it was, again, it was the lad from Newcastle, Dan. And I think he got the nickname Tuck Shop Dan. And he had an enormous rucksack. And I remember I helped him in the evenings because he'd broken the zip of his gaiters. And he figured that with these piano hands, I could get my fingers in to undo his zip, to his gaiters, that is. And he said in return, I could have anything from his bag. And I've never tried Pop-Tarts before. And now I'm that experience richer as well. And so I think that works really well. I mean, also, but before everybody adopts that strategy, I must also highlight when I attended the first MDS in Peru, the first and only full MDS in Peru the year after, I realized that when I met all my tent mates, it appeared that we'd all adopted the same strategy. So all the bags were lean and very little was given away. So everybody has a strategy on what to do or what not to do with MDS. But for me, you know, my point was around the people and the strongest experiences that I've had from, if not the 23 races, but far the majority of the races is the experience that I've had on a human level.
It's that experience that I think makes your social channels a really good spot, because there's a lot of social media out there around ultra running endurance sports, but the messages you're looking to put out there to encourage people to go and try these things, to learn a bit more about it, and to show that it's as much the experience, the people, and what it will give you back as it is running however many miles it may be. If people wanted to go and check some of those places out, where are the best places online where people could find you? Would it be your Instagram account or are there other spots as well?
Instagram is probably Instagram is good. It's rich on photos and stories. That's danish.ultrarunner. That's it. Or in business, which will also have some running content and a few video interviews with runners and business people, and sometimes both. And that's anybody on LinkedIn will find me on just using my name, Jakob Block, and that's, yeah, you'll probably have that written, but that's Jacob with a K and Block, B-L-O-C-H. And that's, if any of this sounds like your cup of tea, then you should follow me on that. I try and get the balance right by not forgetting my day job, but also try and blend in a bit of running related content, but often with a little bit more of a business angle on it, a little bit more of a mental health angle on it. Yesterday, I uploaded an interview that I did with Gediminas on the finish line of the Vermont 100. And he has an incredible angle on why he entered ultra running and what ingredient that plays in his ongoing management of his own mental health. And he gives a very honest and eloquent account of that journey and what running is to him. So I figured stuff like that, which is less about, you know, awesome photography and finish line photos and Medal Mondays and all the rest of it, that I try and keep for Instagram. And then I try and keep a little bit more of a blog, video blog, a little bit more business content, you know, on LinkedIn, you know, where we might examine stuff like jet lag management, mental health, you know, getting an edge on business and how you use fitness and sport and ultra running to try and give yourself an edge. So yeah, those would be the two outlets, Instagram and LinkedIn. That's gladly see you all there.
Well, spot on. The links to those, everyone, will be in the show notes below. So Jakob, thank you for carving out the time for us in the schedule today. Really fun conversation. We covered tons of areas. I know we could do a load more, and I look forward to catching up, whether it's out on a trail in a race or who knows, in an airport somewhere.
Warren, it's been an absolute pleasure, and really nice to spend some time. I appreciate all your questions and the time you've taken. So until next time.
That's it for this week. This was the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. We hope to see you back next week for more randoms around running, people, performance, and business content. I'm Jakob, your host, and this was the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. For more information about everything that goes on here in this business, you may want to follow me on LinkedIn. For anything that goes on in my world on the trails and in ultra running, you may want to jump onto Instagram and follow the Danish Ultra Runner. Thank you again. Bye-bye.